This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH, and 96.5 TIC. This morning, we have a very serious topic for you and one that we really need to talk about. Our guest is going to be Ann Daigle. She's president of the Brian Daigle Foundation. Our discussion this morning is going to be on mental health and suicide awareness. Ann, welcome to the program, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Morgan.
For people who may not be aware of you or what your group is all about, what the foundation's all about, how would you describe it? What would you tell people?
Well, basically, we support people who are grieving the loss of a loved one, as well as we educate our community on mental health and suicide awareness.
So where do you begin at your foundation, at your center, when somebody comes to you and they're struggling or they know somebody who's struggling? Where does this whole process begin?
So what we do is we don't provide mental health care ourselves, but we do provide education around it, around mental health and suicide awareness. So we offer different training programs and different presentations to help people better understand how to support people who may be struggling, or how to see if somebody may be struggling and where to get them the help that they need.
When you're talking about such a serious issue like this, people might be concerned, obviously, about trust. How do I know that I'm going to the right person? So I don't know if you can open up about your story a little bit, talk about who Brian is, but obviously knowing who you're talking to is something that's really important, and knowing that you're going to the right person or the right group of people. Is that something you could talk about?
Absolutely. So it's important that you do create that trust, a level of safety, that the people feel safe to be able to share and to be able to open up. So that means that the person receiving that information has to be willing to open up as well. So I do. You know, I open up about my loss of my son, Brian, who was 19 years old, to suicide. And I share the signs that I did not see back then. He died in 2011. We weren't talking about suicide and mental health like we are now. So I did not see the signs because I weren't aware of them. So I honestly share and openly share that maybe if I knew now, if I knew back then what I know now, maybe, just maybe, I like to think my life would be a little different. So I like to educate people and teach them about the warning signs, about the risk factors, about how to have this conversation with people, and how important it is that we normalize the conversation surrounding mental health, that mental health is no different than our physical health.
And what is one way that you try to tell people that it is okay to talk about this issue? Okay, maybe you're not talking about it at the water cooler at work, but if we were to go back, as you mentioned, 10, 20, 30, or even further back years ago, this was not something that anybody talked about anywhere.
No, they did not. And I see people who did not have permission or be able to share about their losses or about their struggles, and how much, you know, 40, 50 years later, they're finally being able to have this conversation now. And oh my goodness, how relieved they are that they can have this conversation.
I know somebody, Ann, It wasn't a suicide, but their friend died in an accidental drowning. And that was something that you did not bring up or talk about 50, 60 years ago. But that person today still talks about it. And more openly, again, we're in that era, that society where it is okay to talk about those kinds of things.
It is. You know, I just a few weeks ago, I attended a conference with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. It was a long-term survivor conference. And there were people there who, you know, had lost, whether it was a sibling or a parent or a spouse or a child, you know, all those years later, but they were given a space and permission to be able to share about their loss. And it's a game changer for many, many people.
You have been doing this work for how long, Anne?
Over 10 years now. We'll be celebrating our 10th year in 2024 through 2025 for the Brian Daigle Foundation.
And what made you say after what happened with your son that this was going to be your next calling, that you were going to use that experience to help others who might not have an avenue to turn? Because obviously this is difficult for you, and yet you're turning it into a positive in a way that you're able to help other people.
Well, I think for me, Morgan, it was talking about my son. And also being able to share about Brian, but also being able to help people, because I remember those days when I felt so alone, so isolated, like I was the only person in the world this happened to. And I learned that I wasn't. There's thousands of people that lose loved ones to suicide, or thousands of people that lose a child or a loved one. And having that connection, having that sense of community with others who totally understand, it helped me. And so I wanted to be able to be there for others. And I learned also that giving back and helping others, oh my goodness, it helped me tremendously.
I know, Anne, and I realize, by the way, on Face Connecticut, my guest is Anne Daigle, president of the Brian Daigle Foundation. I realize that we're having this conversation before September. I realize that the original broadcast of it is slated for August of 2024, obviously a month before September, but with September being National Suicide Awareness Month and are having this conversation on the earlier side of things, how do you think that that might shape someone's perception of September that might not be fully aware of the issue or that it is National Prevention Month? So if someone's hearing this sooner, what could they do? What steps could they do?
Well, they can register for some walks through the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. We have 5 walks throughout Connecticut. So if they go onto the AFSP.org website, they can find our Connecticut chapter that way. And they can look at the 5 walks throughout Connecticut. They can volunteer to help out at the walks. They can walk. They can have a conversation. They can learn, reach out to us, and we can help them find some trainings and some education. And maybe they can make a difference in somebody else's life.
And we'll go back to talking about the walks in a little bit. And I will ask you for those specifics and that information a little later on in our conversation this morning. But I want to go back to the topic of suicide now and have maybe a heavier conversation with you for the next few minutes. For somebody who is concerned about someone, or for somebody who might at least want to be aware what kind of warning signs to be on the lookout for, is that something that you're prepared to talk about a little bit? What should somebody be aware of if they think someone might be considering going down the suicidal path?
So there's a few options for people. First, I would like to talk about 988. That is our National Suicide Awareness Lifeline. It is 2 years old. We just celebrated on July 16th, the 2-year anniversary of our 988 number. So that is the equivalent of our 911, but for mental health. So if anybody has any concerns that they need, and it does not have to be a crisis point, but if they have some questions or concerns about somebody they care about or a friend or a coworker, they can call this number, 988, and people can help them and get them the support that they need. So that's one really easy one to do for people. Secondly, what they can also do is just be aware of people and notice a difference. If you see a difference in somebody, They're acting differently. They may be isolating a little bit more. They're not engaging in conversation. Maybe they're looking a little bit different. Maybe they're not taking care of themselves the way that they used to. Maybe they seem to be more withdrawn and maybe more depressed. So any change in the behavior of somebody is something to be concerned about. Now, that does not necessarily mean that the person is suicidal, but it may be an opportunity to have a conversation with this person.
The work that you do and the work that your group does, is it limited to just Connecticut, or do you have outreach that maybe takes you to other places in the New England region or elsewhere in the country?
I will do some speaking with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I just presented at a workshop there at our national conference. Sometimes I will do some national things. For the most part, we do keep it in Connecticut, although we have a specific program for the Brian Daigle Foundation, which is called Lax to Live. And it's a lacrosse program. My Brian was a high school lacrosse player, and he loved lacrosse. So we've taken the lacrosse field as a platform to talk about mental health and suicide awareness with our athletes, with our schools. And so we were able to do a few colleges this year. One was in Massachusetts, Wheaton College in Massachusetts. We've also done a few high schools out of state. And we've done, I think, 35 high schools this past year. So we've reached thousands of kids with this conversation that, you know what, it's okay not to be okay. It is okay to ask for help because there is help out there. You don't have to struggle alone. So there is support.
I almost don't understand in a way how long ago, and it doesn't even have to be that long ago, within the last 20 years even, that it wasn't okay to talk about your feelings. I never understood that, Anne.
I know. People have to be...
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things, like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Strong. There's so much stigma still surrounding mental health, and people believe it's a sign of weakness that, you know, it's all in your head, you know, just buck up and get, you know, do what you need to do. And that's for years and years and years, and it was like that. Not for everybody, thankfully. It sounds like maybe not you. But, you know, it's still culturally, it's still that way in different cultures. And in our world of sports and with men, of course, too, there's a big difference with how men are open about being vulnerable. Thank goodness we are having this conversation. But, you know, I ask people, you know, you mentioned talking around the water cooler, right? You know, we'll go into the water cooler and say, oh, you know, geez, I have a backache. This hurts, that hurts, you know, all the physical ailments that we have and complain about. But when do we ever stand with our peers or our colleagues and say, you know what? I'm just feeling a little off right now, you know, emotionally, mentally. I don't know. I'm not on my game. I don't know what it is, but I'm just feeling a little off. Who does that, right?
Very good question.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and getting people to be comfortable, or at least knowing who you're comfortable going to with an issue like that. I don't know if people, and you tell me what your thoughts are here, Anne, if people would be comfortable going up to a stranger, or again, that person that they trust, a friend, maybe a colleague, you know, maybe listening to you on the radio and people saying, okay, well, Anne seems to know, you know, what I'm looking for and what I need to talk about. So where does that trust come from, or how does somebody perceive someone to be trustworthy?
Well, I think you just have to be open. You have to be able to have this conversation open, have time with them. Don't just ask the question, how are you doing today? You know, how are you? How's your day going? Be ready to get a response that maybe you don't want to hear, right? So maybe we're going to ask that question and be ready for a different response. Like, yeah, you know what? I'm really not okay today. You know, we say that question, how are you? I'm good. How are you? You know, so we really need to be ready to open up this conversation to take it to a deeper level.
The issues that we're talking about this morning on Face Connecticut with Ann Daigle, president of the Brian Daigle Foundation, on the issue of mental health and suicide awareness. And when you go and you talk at these events nationally and you talk with colleagues who do similar work to what you do from other parts of the nation, are you hearing the same kinds of things from them?
Yes. Yes, I am. What I am hearing right now, which is great, is that the tides have changed and people are more open to have this conversation. I've been to high schools throughout the country. I've been to different organizations, and our young people are being little sponges for this. They want to gather all the information they can. They want to have this conversation. So that gives me hope. That gives me hope that this generation coming up is going to really make a difference.
I'm glad that you mentioned high school. I remember when I was in high school, which at this point was 10 to 14 years ago. I'm 28 years old now, and yes. And I remember having these conversations. It wasn't often, but, you know, it did come up at school, or there were assemblies on the matter. And I would imagine that is still continuing where I went to school and other schools as well. Do you hear directly from high school students who say to you that they want to learn more? And if so, what do they want to learn about?
Yes, absolutely. The high school students do want to learn more, even younger now. Even our middle school students do want to learn now. And they want to learn how to have this conversation in a safer way, because they are already talking to their peers. Their peers are already struggling, and they're helping their peers without really having the skills and the tools to really get them the support that they need. So they want to be able to have the proper training and the proper understanding of how to help somebody who is in crisis.
Ann Daigle, my guest this morning on Face Connecticut, president of the Brian Daigle Foundation, and also Brian's Healing Hearts Center for Hope and Healing. We haven't talked a whole lot about that. Is that separate from the foundation, Ann?
It's really included in the foundation, but it is our space that we have in Niantic. It's a beautiful old home we're able to find, where I wanted to have a home and a living room and a inviting space for people who are grieving. So all our support groups are in the home, or now we actually have expanded to a building on our property that was once our garage, but it's now called the Cottage at Brian's Healing Hearts. So we're able to hold bigger groups. So it's a very inviting space. People can come into the kitchen, get coffee, get water, get snacks, go into the support group, sit on couches in the living room. It's a very safe and inviting space for people to be able to open up and share about their grief and their loss.
And when I hear the word foundation, and I could be wrong about this, this could be a misperception, but I often think of a charity or a nonprofit. Is this something that requires donations to continue moving forward?
Yes, we are 100% donor-based. We do not get any funding from any state or federal agencies. So we rely solely on our donors, and we also do a lot of fundraising on our own as well.
How do those efforts look?
They're good. We have very generous donors. We have all of our fundraisers that we do. We do two major fundraisers each year. We do a golf tournament, and we do the Niantic Jingle 5K, which is a big 5K event in Niantic at McCooks Park, which last year we had about 1,500 runners and walkers. And that's our biggest fundraiser.
Again, wanted to talk about those community walks. What do those look like for somebody who has never taken part in one of those, but they want to?
So they're a very welcoming and hopeful event. There's people who are struggling with their own mental health. They're survivors of suicide loss as well. And we all wear certain beads, and each color bead represents why we are connected to the cause. Whether it's through the loss of a sibling, you wear an orange bead for the loss of a sibling, you wear a white bead for the loss of a child, and so on. And you wear certain color beads to support the cause. You wear a green bead if you yourself is struggling with mental health. So it's very inclusive. We welcome anyone. We have a few speakers. We have an opening ceremony, and people walk. And it is very hopeful that there's connection, that we're all here to support the cause, and we can make a difference.
I have never been to one of these, Anne, but if I had to make an inference, just an educated guess, really, I would say that these are definitely emotional moments, and that it's probably not surprising to see people outwardly expressing those emotions, maybe teary-eyed people are crying or hugging and things like that, and even among strangers. And so I would imagine it's welcoming in that regard, that there's no stigma against something like that at one of these walks.
There is no stigma, Morgan. It's wonderful to be able to have the connection with others who just get it. And there is emotion, but it's in a beautiful way, and tears are beautiful, and tears are a way to express our love for the people who are no longer here, express our gratitude for the community that we have or we have come connected to and belong to. So it's a beautiful way to come and just be with others. And it's always, always leaves there with a feeling of hopefulness.
That connection that these people are making, have you seen it firsthand yourself, that they make that new connection, that new friend, someone that may be able to understand them in that unique way that others can't? So that sense of community that's being established through these walks, have you seen it firsthand yourself, or have you yourself experienced it?
Both. I've seen it firsthand with people at the walks, and I have experienced it myself. You know, people I did not know, they come up, they see that I'm wearing a white bead in honor of my son that I lost, and others will come up who are wearing a white bead, and we just make that connection instantly, and we hug. And sometimes we stay connected. I know in the support groups that we do for survivors of suicide loss, those people become family instantly. And as one of our group members says, we speak the same language. So we understand sometimes without even speaking. And they get it. And you don't have to talk too much about it, but we just understand there's an instant bond that is created with survivors of suicide loss, and who just understand.
And I've appreciated your time, and we only have a few more moments left on the show. One of my final questions for you, obviously, have we missed anything that you really want to bring up as we approach September, National Suicide Awareness Month?
No, I think you've covered it all. I just want to make sure that people understand that our 988 number is out there for anybody, and you can also text 988. Again, for people who have questions or concerns, or they themselves are concerned, and we have great resources here in the state of Connecticut to help people.
And also, if you could run over that information for these upcoming walks, just so people can hear it and look into it some more.
Absolutely, yes. So our first walk is in southeastern Connecticut. That is on September 21st. The next walk would be on October 6th. That is in New Haven County, and that's the New Haven / Hamden walk that we have. On October 19th, we have the Litchfield walk. On October 20th, it's the Capitol walk that we do at the Bushnell. That's a great walk on October 20th. And then finally, on October 26th, we have the Fairfield County walk. So all of these walks raised funds, and all of the funds that we raise, half of the funds will stay in Connecticut for free education on suicide awareness trainings, and anybody can access them if you reach out to our Connecticut chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.
And Anne, how can people learn more about the Brian Daigle Foundation and also make contributions and donations to it?
Oh, thank you for that question. So they can reach out to us at brianshealinghearts.org. If you type in, if you can't remember brianshealinghearts.org, you could look up the Brian Daigle Foundation. That will bring you to our website. There is a donate button on our page. You can send checks to us at Brian's Healing Hearts at 461 Main Street in Niantic, Connecticut. Or you can reach out to me at ian@brianshealinghearts.org.
I really appreciate your time and coming on Face Connecticut this morning with us, Ann. And I know that you're a friend of the station's here, so people will hear you from time to time. Obviously, this issue goes on year-round. It's not something isolated just to September. So I thank you for coming on and highlighting the issue and how to tackle it with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me on and giving me a voice to share about this really important topic.
And we'll talk again. You take care. Thank you.
You too. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.